Hello.
Hello!
Welcome to Movie Banter.
I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jenny Master. No, I can't do that.
Ooh, John's taken on a weird double personality there.
I know.
Rather sordid. Yes, Jenny's not here.
No, she's rehearsing.
No.
She's in a play.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Well, she's in one and directing one.
At the same time?
Different. I think it's sort of a double bill thing.
So she's not directing herself?
No.
Which would link into Desert Island Flicks very early. We'd normally plug that later on in the episode.
Exactly, but it would tie. But no, so we are Jenny-less.
Jenny-less.
She is currently doing other things, but we haven't ditched her. It's all right.
No,
Gemma Arterton is not en route.
Well,
more's the pity.
I know. Boo. Boo. Never mind.
But normal service will be resumed in
indeed.
Due course.
But
it's like a venture back to the early days.
It is, rather.
It's just me and you.
It's rather old school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So welcome to the episode. We've had a couple of weeks of not recording podcasts.
True.
Largely to me not wanting to. No, I did want to. Of course I
want to. But you're a busy man.
No, I'm a busy man.
Yes.
Waiting for a baby that still hasn't come. Get a move on.
Yeah, I'm sensing the frustration you're getting. Get a move on.
It's overdue. You know, when library books are overdue, there's a fine. That's all I'm saying.
So you're going to find the baby when it comes out.
Find the baby. Absolutely.
No food until you pay the fine.
Exactly. No solids for at least 6 months.
Oh, that's harsh. You're harsh.
I think he's about right, actually, isn't it?
Really?
I think so.
I don't know. What are you asking me for?
I've only read the books up to labour. I don't know what I'm
up to labour?
Yeah.
Oh, see.
Yeah,
just
not the Labour Party.
We've had an election now. It's all different.
Yes, indeed. So some films to talk about.
Yes, but now we're back with a topical up to speed.
With a topical vengeance.
Yes.
And we've got The Town we'll be talking about.
Yes.
Ben Affleck's film.
We've also got Tamara Drew,
yes.
Which is a new British comedy,
yes,
starring Gemma Arterton.
Indeed.
Jenny's replacement.
We should have got her for interview.
Oh, if only. There was actually, I got an email, well, as you did probably, which is some like total film subscription thing, saying you could meet Gemma Arterton and the director of Tamara Drew if you want, but it was that night at 9 and we couldn't make it.
That was sent to us by Mr. Mark Loveday, who is a keen listener. Hello, Mark Loveday.
How are you?
So we couldn't interview Gemma, unfortunately.
No.
But we're going to save up for the big one where we just sort of,
kidnap her and make her become a co-host.
make her be a constant podcaster.
The disappearance of Gemma Arterton.
Yes, and just keep re-recording it until she just bantered about films without pleading for help. Come on, Gemma, what did we talk about?
No solids for 6 months.
Oh, no. That's very odd. I'm going to move on very quickly.
I think we probably should.
Buried, there's an idea. The film Buried, which is Ryan Reynolds and, so many other cast members.
It's a cast of one.
Exactly.
Yeah, and some voices.
And the rest of the cast were just hanging around the set going, when are we on?
Exactly.
But I've been hired. And the director sort of said, well, we shouldn't have bothered.
Exactly. Don't know why he signed
the
contract, really.
Stand on top of the coffin and make some noise. Buried and the Other Guys.
Yes.
And Devil.
And Devil.
It's all a bit sinister towards the end.
That's very true. It all goes a little bit. Well, I was going to say Buried in the Devil. The Other Guy's not sinister.
I think.
Tamara
Drew is the only thing to lift our spirits here, isn't it?
Well, that is true. Yes. Gemma Arterton in a pair of tiny denim shorts. Yeah. Will it lift anyone's spirits? Well, anyone male.
Hobba.
Yes. Can I take a slight break there just to turn this way?
No, please do.
Which I'll then forget to edit out. So if I left this in, that's because when editing it, I forgot that I did this.
Exactly.
So you just heard me turn the microphone.
Fair point.
But yeah, so The Town.
Let's do The Town.
And also, yes, Desert Island Flicks is best actor-director, or actor who directed himself.
In a film, yes.
Indeed.
Because some actors, they get a bit cocky. They think, I could direct, and they give it a go, and bless them. Well done.
Well, yes.
Sorry, I didn't mean that about Jen. But...
Right. Yeah, she's not directing herself, though.
That's a fair point.
Actually, I think she... No, I don't think she is. I don't think she's in the one that she's directing, but she might be. But if she is only in a tiny capacity.
Right.
But yeah, I think you'd have to be, weirdly, you've got to be quite egotistical. I mean, it's not in a bad way to want to direct yourself as an actor, director as well. But presumably you then also need to be self-aware enough that you can't just say a line, that's brilliant.
Well, actually...
I was brilliant. Everyone else was rubbish. Do another take.
I've heard Ben Affleck say that in making The Town... one of his big problems he found was when he was... Obviously, he's in most of the scenes himself.
Yeah.
The film follows him. And so when filming other people, he'd do second, third, fourth takes. And then filming himself, he'd just do one. And not thinking, I'm brilliant, I've nailed it in that one take.
Yeah.
But he'd be thinking, it's a bit self-indulgent. All the other actors are hanging around the set.
That's true.
He's thinking, it looks a bit bad if I go, oh, no, I can do it so much better. I'll do it again. And he had to get other people on the crew to say, yeah, do it again, Ben, do it again.
Trust us, that wasn't your best work.
But otherwise, he just found he was just doing it once the whole time. And then not getting the best takes because he just felt really bad taking everyone else's time up.
Yeah, so he's all right, enough about me, right, let's get back to it.
Thinking, I can do this at home, you know. So it's a fine movie. It is.
Ben Affleck, it's sort of a bank heist thing, and they kidnap someone who then he falls for, and she lives locally, so he sees her, and then it all goes wrong. It's obvious Heat parallels, but not in a bad way. Only because you get a gunfight in the street, and it's about bank robbery, but on a far lower level. Whereas Heat is sort of a highly professional crew. I mean, they're still a professional crew, but this is slightly more human in a way.
Yeah.
Heat is all about the police and all about the crew.
Yeah.
And it's a long film about playing off each other.
I think it really works as a film if you kind of just let go of other films.
You can
acknowledge the influences.
Yes.
I thought there's a big nod to things like Goodfellas as well. With the sort of, the kind of this guy who doesn't really want necessarily, could turn his back on his life of crime, but we follow the fact that he is definitely in it.
Yes.
And also the fact that this film is set in Boston, I think it's the Charlestown area.
Yes.
Where apparently there's this statistic that a lot of people there go into bank robbery. It's their big thing,
Yes.
It's the growth industry.
Although, as it says, only at the end of the film, it says, oh, by the way, not everyone's a bank robber.
Yeah,
we just want to say lots of people are very good, hard-working people, but for the sake of the film, everyone's a bank robber.
We've met two people from Charlestown who weren't bank robbers. Well, they looked a bit shifty, but they weren't bank robbers.
Exactly. Weren't bank robbers that we know
of. No, exactly. Similar to sort of Goodfellas, you're in a world where most people are criminals, really.
Yes.
And similar to Heat, you've got the daylight gun battle with the police and that sort of thing.
But again, most of it's sort of in an underground car park rather than a... I find it, when watching it, I wasn't thinking, it's just like Heat. But I was just thinking, it's a little bit like Heat. As you say, I think you need to let go of that. Because it doesn't copy Heat at all. But it's just the most obvious parallel.
And the fact that but it's not his first film he's directed. He did the very, very good Gone Baby Gone.
Yeah, which I still haven't seen.
Before that, which is very good. I think it's actually probably better than this one. I think in a way, only because it was a bit, I don't want to use the word, more unique.
This is quite conventional. Phrase.
Yeah,
it doesn't spin off in wildly unpredictable ways, but that doesn't make it. It's no worse for it.
Yeah.
It just makes it. It's a very well told, very well made, but just sort of it's a normal story. Whereas Gone Baby Gone, I haven't seen it, but I think it's more unusual, so
it
you can
more,
do a bit more with it.
Exactly, yeah. But he's clearly, Ben Affleck is a newish director and clearly shows that he's very good. And in fact, at the minute, he's probably getting more attention for his directing than his acting.
Yes,
because Hollywood sort of. Sadly, lampooned him a bit for his acting skills.
I'm quite pleased. The trailer for The Town say that the captions come up saying something like from the acclaimed director of Gone Baby Gone, not saying Ben Affleck.
No,
and I think that's because anyone who knows that Ben Affleck directed this won't care and will think, really, it's meant to be a very good film. We'll go to it. If you're trying to pull in sort of the average moviegoing punter, you say directed by Ben Affleck. Lots of people may say Ben Affleck. So it's probably good that they muted it.
The star of Armageddon, exactly. And Gigli.
Exactly. But it also supports what I said years ago, or during his run of slightly mediocre films, which is that he is good, and he has a lot of talent. He's just made some slightly dodgy films, but he was never a bad actor. He was just in a few bad films.
No, I've always liked him. Bear in mind, he won an Oscar for co-writing Good Will Hunting, so he's shown, he's a writer, an actor, and a director. I still think that I've always given him extra credit ever since in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. He lampoons himself perfectly.
Yes.
Disappearing
a hooker from Ben Affleck's trailer. I haven't been with a hooker today.
Exactly. Just comic genius. And if you're prepared to, send yourself up to that extreme, something like that, I think fair credit to
him. Well, it's him and Matt Damon in that, just both listing each other's terrible films.
Yeah, exactly.
And just sort of mocking, whatever you say, Bounce Boy. And
it's just, they don't mind
and
it.
Like, yeah, and so it's
I think it's harsh when people have had a go at him too much. He's made some dodgy film choices,
Almost everyone has made some bad films. So now he's clearly... maybe he just thought, right, I've been in a few terrible films. I'm going to start directing my own, directing myself, keep it all in the family.
And he's very good.
And then he'll churn out good things.
But I think, what I was going to say is because he's still a fairly new director, he's clearly heavily influenced by things like Michael Mann, Martin Scorsese, whatever. But there's no harm in that. They've done some brilliant films.
Yeah.
And not every film has to be as good as Heat or as good as Goodfellas.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's not going to be.
If that's the comparisons you're drawing, then you're in pretty good.
Exactly, you're doing something right. Yeah. So I think he's it's a great film and a good job. Mm. Yeah,
very much so. And it's getting very good reviews from almost everyone.
Yeah.
And we've had lots of good comments from people as well. So including from Russ.
Hey, Russ.
Hello, Russ.
Greetings.
Saying, well, hello there. A few words to contribute about the town. I saw it Friday, in the most excellent Everyman Hampstead. Oh. Go if you haven't yet. I never have. I'm assuming...
Seminar?
Seminar?
They have seminars occasionally. You can hire a screen, have a seminar in there. Marvellous.
Fair enough. I'm sure they show films as well. I was hugely impressed. The characters are very well portrayed, despite it being a heisty and shooty sort of film. Really got into the characters. Enjoyed it from start to finish, and at the end my lady friend said it was the most romantic film she'd seen all year. Oh. So it's well enough crafted to appeal to a plethora of tastes. Heartily recommended. Yeah, I can see the romance thing, actually.
Yeah.
Because you get the conflict between him falling for this woman. She doesn't know how they've met, because he sort of fakes a first meeting, because he's following her.
Rebecca Hall, isn't it?
Yes,
Rebecca Hall, she's very good.
So he's just making sure that she didn't see anything during the heist. And then it all spirals from there. Yeah. And yet that's handled well as well, because there's no... Because she clearly starts to realise something's a bit weird, but doesn't mind too much. And, how it's all revealed and how it all unfolds is nicely done.
And it's nice because we wish them well. We know he's a bit of a criminal, but we wish them well as a couple. And yet you sort of go, well, is it really going to be able to work out, though, because of this?
Yeah.
You know? And it is, I think it's a very compelling film.
Yeah, and also he's clearly portrayed as sort of a moral side as well. Because there's one sort of loose cannon on the crew.
Jeremy Renner.
Well. Yeah, Jeremy Renner is brilliant in this.
Very good, isn't he?
Yeah,
very
I remember good. In Roger Ebert's review, he said something like, Jeremy Renner is in this, who is in the Hurt Locker, but you may not recognise him in this. And I was thinking, how can you not? He looks like Jeremy Renner, surely. Yeah. But watching it, you can see, because in the Hurt Locker, he's very professional, clean-shaven, a bit leaner as well. And in this, he does look quite different.
It took me a while to think, he's the guy from the Hurt Locker, isn't he?
It's not... I mean, it is obviously, because he looks like, but he's playing such a different character and doing it so well that, it's very well put together. But Ben Affleck is clearly, he's portrayed, his character is very much, sort of, he has morals, I don't think by the start of the film, without saying anything, that he doesn't kill anyone. While they all turn up with guns and they do knock people about a bit, they're all, they don't want to shoot people, that's not what they do, their job is to rob the bank, go away.
Yeah.
So given that he's clearly a good guy, not a hardened killer, it's easier to root for him.
Yeah.
So the characters are very.
So I think you could see it as a romantic film, I guess. Although, if that's the most romantic film that Russ and his lady friend have seen all year, they haven't seen Eat, Pray, Love, clearly. Or The Switch. Well, actually, thinking about it, have there been any decent romantic films this year? I can't think of any, to be honest.
None are grabbing me.
No, pretty much none.
Nothing obvious.
No, fair enough.
Yeah. Well, I remember, actually.
One where Jennifer Aniston was handcuffed to her husband?
The Bounty Hunter.
Yeah.
Or the Bounty...
No, still nothing.
Bounty Hunter. No, still not working for him. Yeah. Weirdly, I saw Jen the other day, and she was talking about romantic films. Saying, I think it's part of a dissertation. She pitched Saw as a romantic film.
Really?
But not, I think, romantic in the sort of the old English style of romantic love. Not sort of just hearts and flowers, but whatever that means. And if Jen was here, she could do a far better description than I am.
Apparently,
we need to remember that and ask her when she's on air.
Well, we should resurrect that feature we had. We only did it a couple of times, of re-pitching films.
Oh, yes.
I think we called it Son of a Pitch, didn't we? Or something like that.
Yes.
Pitch Snapping. That's right. And pitching films. If anyone wants to email any in, we'll gladly play it on air.
There was also in a sitcom in America called Cougar Town, and they played a game in that, which I think we should probably nick and do.
Okay.
Which is where you take two films and combine the titles with sort of an overlapping thing, and I now can't think of a good example. If one film ends with one word and one film starts with the same word, combine all those films. But without saying that title, you just describe that film.
Oh, that's
and then
quite
you have
good.
To work out what the
I
title
see.
Is.
Yes. Okay. So the disappearance of a town like Alice Creed.
No, because it doesn't end.
Oh, I see. So it's got to overlap.
It's got to properly overlap.
So Star Wars of the Roses.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so it would be like, you know, Danny DeVito is trying to handle a divorce between Han Solo and Princess Leia, which gets increasingly acrimonious.
I see.
And then you get Star Wars and Roses.
We'll give that a go.
Once we think about it in advance, rather than me just remembering it right now, we'll have to do that.
So we'll concoct it for yourselves. And again, if anyone listening would like to email any in, you've heard the rules.
That's true, now we've set it out.
Write down, and you write the blurb, and then at the bottom, do lots of returns, and then put the title.
Yes.
Or don't, we'll just work it out.
That's true, we'll just
But podcast@moviebanter.co.uk, get thinking.
Yes, get them sent in.
You have your missions.
Sticking back to the town, we've gone off on a slight tangent. Also got a message from Naomi Salem, just saying, loved it.
Nice to know.
Short but sweet.
Yes.
But yeah, it's very, very good.
Mr. Paul Tonkinson.
He's like famous.
Fine comedian. He is. And colleague on The Big Breakfast.
My former boss, sort of.
Your former co-host.
Yes, he hosted The Big Breakfast for about 3 episodes while I was on it before he got revamped. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Tonkinson, if you're listening, greetings to you. The town... I don't know why I saluted then. You can't see that.
I don't know why you said you saluted. No, you could have got away with that.
I could have got away with that. What for you, crazy, meddling Tonkinson. he says, the town was a lovely heist movie. Ben Affleck does a great job directing. The best movie of this kind since Heat. And yes, influenced by it.
Yes. But not a rip-off. It's definitely its own thing.
And a thought echoed by Mr. Ian Macbeth, who says...
My flatmate.
Your flatmate, indeed. Yeah. Says, the town was tense, entertaining, very well made, top acting and directing. Lots of similarities to Heat, though, which left me thinking it was a little unoriginal. But then heist movies are unoriginal.
Well,
they're always going to be, because someone's done... I don't know what the first heist movie was, but it would be a while ago, and then they've been updated via... things like Reservoir Dogs and the modern bank heists.
Yeah, and it definitely has a different feel to Heat, where you can draw parallels. But then, as I said, and in fact, as we will come to later with someone else, you know,
mental Heat, processes.
I know, I'll use actual words.
Control-Alt-Delete on the brain there.
But Heat itself is not original, because Heat was a remake of LA Takedown.
Very good point.
Which we will come to in a different podcast that we're going to talk about, worst films.
Another time.
Yes.
Good. Well, shall we move on to Tomorrow Drew?
I think so. Yes. Yeah, I think that's how.
In conclusion, The Town.
Very good.
Very good.
Go and see.
Go see. I wrote a pilot for a sitcom called The Town once.
Oh, really?
It's going to be like a spoof, kind of following people around the town, different shots and things. And very different to this film. Very different.
Bank robbery. You could have had a bank robbery.
Exactly. Might have got commission then.
Yeah.
I'm not bitter.
Get it directed by Ben Affleck.
Exactly, yeah.
But Tomorrow Drew.
Yeah, did you?
Is a Britcom. Which you have not seen.
I've not seen Tomorrow Drew, no. I'm aware of its work. It used to be a cartoon strip, didn't it?
Which I didn't know at all. But I think it's sort of loosely based on that.
I've seen it in reviews talked about Tomorrow Drew based on the graphic novel by Posy Simmons.
Mm.
Which there may be a graphic novel as well, but I'm aware of it as a cartoon strip in newspapers.
Yeah, sort of like Peanuts is not a graphic novel.
Well, exactly.
It's a load of different cartoon strip.
I just wondered if there is a graphic novel, I fully apologise, but I did wonder if it sort of, they thought, we can't say based on a cartoon strip out the back page of The Guardian. it's a cartoon, it's a graphic novel.
Just like Watchmen.
Nowadays, graphic novel is a worthy piece of literature.
Exactly.
Whereas, you know, the bit underneath the crossword, just above the Sudoku, doing it.
But I think the comic strip is, cover a small town with lots of different characters, so it fits in the film. And the basic idea is that Tomorrow Drew is played by Gemma Arterton, who comes back to this small town, having been away for years, is now a journalist and wants to come back to partly sort out her mother's house in order to sell it, and also wants to do some writing, and causes a degree of upset in all the locals. There's an older man who keeps having affairs, who wants to have an affair with her, and then her ex-boyfriend, and then a new rock singer who comes in. And lots of people fall for her, and hilarity ensues. I say it's hilarity. It's quite lightly comedic, but it also has a degree of drama as well. It's not strictly a sort of laugh-out-loud comedy all the time. It's just sort of a light drama. With Tamsin Gregg as well playing the wife of the floundering husband, and she runs a writer's retreat with lots of other characters there. So it's just lots of different sort of eccentric characters coming together in a small British town, and then see what comes forth. And I did enjoy it, but not quite as much as I wanted to.
Is it funny? Because I've heard people saying it's comic content. It's not really.
It has moments of comedy, but the characters are always... I was never bored by it. I was always watching it and interested in how it was all progressing.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I think I was expecting a sort of chuckle-worthy Britcom, and it's not quite that. It's not a Four Weddings and a Funeral kind of comedy. It's more of a sleepy small town comic at times, but also dramatic. So yeah, it's a hard pitch to set, which is why it's probably easy to say, oh, it's a comedy.
It sounds like, having seen the trailer, and I've read someone, because Tamsin Gregg is in a long-running radio serial called The Archers in this country, which other overseas people may not be aware of. So I've heard this sort of pitched, and The Archers is very much sort of a country village kind of farmland community thing. And I've heard someone pitch this as sort of The Archers, but with a sex drive.
Yes.
And I did wonder, is it sort of, particularly given that this woman comes back and all the guys seem to fawn over her, is it sort of painting this English country life thing as we're all sort of rolling around in haystacks and...
Not quite, but a little bit. But I think I was expecting slightly more of that. Not in a pervy way, but just that was the tone I was expecting. Yeah. And it's not quite, but it's more... I think the thing which I think bothered me is that it's all a little bit too simple and straightforward. Like, in that people just seem to go, oh, rather than just thinking she's hot. It's more... Because her ex-boyfriend always had unresolved feelings for her, so that makes sense. The philandering husband just wants to sleep with her, but don't really know. And she sort of goes along with it all, sort of seems to enjoy toying with men, but not really in a mean-spirited way, but we don't really find... It's not really clarified why.
Yeah.
And then towards the end, you know, I've had a change of heart and I want to sort of settle down. And that's not really explained, but it's just sort of, she just does it.
Right.
And I think, so her motivations could have been a bit clearer. Yeah, so it leaves it a little bit sort of slightly unresolved.
Mm.
And it goes in a couple of slightly odd directions as well. But, I mean, it's entertaining, but it's probably a DVD watch rather than a cinema watch.
I hear there are two little young 12-year-old schoolgirls.
Yes, who... I think these... I think they're sort of taken from the comic book, and I think they're quite important in the comic strip. And, yeah, they're essentially two teenage girls who are... They're not prepubescent, but they're probably maybe 15-ish. So starting to think a lot about boys, but not actually sort of have idealistic views or, oh, we do this together, but no, they don't actually want to do anything. So this rock star who Tamara Drew ends up going out with for a bit, they're both lusting after him and sort of want to see him, and that causes problems as well. So they're sort of the comic relief, but again, they're not... Yeah, they cause a couple of problems, and it's not quite clearly defined. It's just slightly irritating. But kind of funny as well.
I heard that's they were the funny ones in it, but if they are a bit sort of...
No, they are funny, well, but that's thing. But the fact that my memories... Because I saw it a couple of weeks ago now, my main memories of it are sort of slight, not as funny as I wanted it to be. So I'm kind of forgetting. I'm sure I did laugh during it, but I can't really remember that. I'm more remembering the bits that didn't quite work for me.
Yes.
So, which I think is telling of the film, but it's a very watchable film. I enjoyed watching it, but it was just left it thinking, nah. So... Yeah, so it's worth a watch, I think. If you feel that you're in the mood for a British comedy, it's probably worth a try.
Yeah.
But don't necessarily rush out to the cinema if you're in the mood for a big laugh.
So what you say is, wouldn't go and see it today, but you could go and see it tomorrow. Okay, moving on.
Paul had the weekend off from gigs because he was expecting a baby.
I haven't done a gig for a week.
And I went to the cinema with him, and you were clearly really for a week. I didn't know that. I thought it was just the weekend.
No, actually, Thursday. No, for, it's not that long. So, 4 days.
But it's clearly backing up with you. Trying to...
Anyway.
Yeah, so tomorrow, rent it on DVD.
Yes,
it's short
fair
version.
Play to you, fair play to you. Should we do an email?
I think we should.
This is an email from... And now, this is from Super Toy. It used to be called Super Toys.
Yeah,
is that right?
I know he changed his Twitter name. I don't...
Has he lost all of his toys bar one?
Maybe he had a clean out. I'm keeping my favourite.
Just my one Super Toy. Because you can't have a lot of Super Toys. It kind of devalues the
overall
value of
the toy. Well, if every Super
Toy...
Well, as they say in The Incredibles, if everyone's super, then no one is.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and Super Toy. If all your toys are super, then they're all rubbish.
Yeah. So there was just one Super Toy left,
yeah.
And this is the one who was emailed in, who has said, so, something happened with my iTunes subscription to the Bantercast, and it downloaded every episode. You poor man.
My poor server, more to the point.
Indeed. Incidentally, something has gone a bit... You may not have seen on iTunes at the 77, I think.
Yeah, it hasn't appeared in iTunes, but it is done. So if you look at the Movie Banter website, then it should be on there.
Yes.
Because the podcast feed that sorts out all these things is done and updated, but iTunes for some reason isn't like
it. So on the off chance you're hearing this one, 78, and you haven't heard 77, then it's there, it's out there.
Yeah, there is
a
77. It's in the ether. Just stick with it.
Yeah. So anyway, Super Toy continues. Yes, having downloaded all the episodes, I decided to listen back to episode one before you got clever with the titles. Ooh, yeah, fair point. Okay.
Was it just called episode one?
I think it was. Oh, fair. Yeah. Recorded November 12th, 2008. Oh, the golden age of podcasting. reviewing Saw 5, James Bond, QOS, Question of Sport, and Max Payne.
Oh.
Good job keeping it more or less the same as it is today. What I heard from Banter 1 is what made me stick around for every other Banter cast. Haven't missed an episode yet.
We've not... Wow. We've not changed in personality terms.
Clearly not.
So... I'm awesome, right? He says. Yeah, that's, I think that's fair point.
Fair point. You are awesome. Well into Petoin.
Listen to every episode now twice, apparently. He's going through them all again.
In addition to Paul Banter on about Saw 5, I made the decision to skip Saw 7, as it's only a 3D only movie, in fact. It'll be sad, as I've seen every other Saw in the theatre in the opening week, but I just can't fall for the gimmick. Mm-hmm. Lastly, I couldn't help but smile with a jab at Louisiana. I'm assuming that was an in-joke in episode one.
Yeah, probably, which we now can't remember because it was nearly 2 years ago. I should listen back to episode one.
Well, I seem to recall we started doing this podcast because we were driving around America thinking we should do a podcast.
Yes.
And so we did. And so I think this was recorded soon after we got back from America when we'd, including a trip to Louisiana, which we drove straight through.
Ah, fair enough.
And didn't stop. I think it was probably just us going, well, America was fun. More than that bit. But, But no offence.
It was still lots of hurricane damage.
Well, it was Lancaster, yeah.
But so. I can't imagine we were just poking fun at them having hurricane damage.
No, I don't think we would have done that. I think it was probably more the fact that
we bombed on through.
We didn't seem that welcome there.
Fair enough.
People would look at our number plate going, oh, yeah, they've got Connecticut plates. They're a long way from home.
Exactly. They're clearly lost.
We thought they have no idea just how far away from home we are.
A few more thousand miles in
here. Yeah.
Actually, the Saw thing, I did, watching the trailer for Saw 7, I did find myself thinking... It's the 3D, I think, that is putting me off.
Yeah.
Because it made it look... It's all a little bit too much, you know, stuff coming out of the screen. And also the Saw... I'm not particularly weak-stomached, but the Saw films are generally quite gory and unpleasant. Mm. But on a flat screen, I can handle it. I don't think I really want someone's intestines flying out of my face.
Not particularly.
No. Yeah. I mean, I want to see how the story pans out. This is apparently the last one, so they say. But and the story has been interesting. I think if someone could edit down... all the films into just a sort of a relatively goreless start to finish run of the film. That would probably be quite interesting. Mm. So the progression of it all over the years. Just lose all the traps. But that might lose something.
Maybe.
But yeah, I may just wait for the
record. I'll give it a go. I will watch it. But
have you been to see them all in the cinema?
I've seen them all in the cinema.
Yeah.
Anyway. Speaking of rather horrific movies... Should we move on to Buried?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
well.
Which is all horrific in terms of tone, not quality.
No, well, I'm presuming is it 15 or an 18?
I can't remember, actually.
I genuinely don't know.
Yes, I haven't got the
time. Well, I tell you what, you introduced the film. I will check the BBFC website because I'm curious to see what they say about it. Because the reason I mention it is because it's one guy in a box.
Yeah.
There's not violence, particularly.
No.
There's not...
there's a bit of... Well,
there's a little bit of violence, I suppose.
Yeah.
But there's not, and there's a bit of swearing. I wonder actually they put in some the extreme. They put in the C word in the film. I reckon to up the rating even because they thought, well, otherwise we're going to get a PG. And that's not good, isn't it? It's not. I don't want kids seeing this.
Yeah.
So you introduce the film.
No, right. It will be on the IMDb as well. We listed as the rating there. But yeah, this is Buried is Ryan Reynolds in a box for 90 minutes essentially. But the premise is that he is a truck driver in Afghanistan. Iraq. His convoy gets attacked. Most of the other drivers get killed. He wakes up in a box, buried somewhere in the desert. He assumes in Iraq still, with a mobile phone and a torch and a knife. And that's about it. And so we don't know why or where. So a lot of it is just him in the dark. The only source of light is the torch that he has. And it's sort of a chemical light he finds as well. Also a lighter or the mobile phone. So that adds a lot of drama to the lighting of it all, but also means that chunks of it are just him in the dark. So after the opening credits, there's probably a good couple of minutes of just silence with him breathing, waking up, and then panicking and working out what's going on. Then he finds the lighter and lights it up. So it's a very, very claustrophobic film. 15.
It's a 15.
Yeah, so it's 15 rated, which is probably R in America, but then R is a bit more broad ranging than ours. Yeah, so it's rated 15 because there's a reasonable amount of swearing.
They say, one use of very strong language, sustained threat and menace is how they describe it.
That's true.
So,
the entire film can take place in the box with the kidnapper's phone in, him trying to phone people to get help. And a lot of the tension and... there are comic moments in it up to a point. But there are
only to release the tension a bit, isn't it?
Yes,
really?
And it's largely him trying desperately to phone people in the opening few minutes for help, and being put on hold, or people not really, I mean, calls 911 because that's all, yeah, so the international calling code, and then 911 because, yeah, he doesn't know any other numbers, who's he going to call?
Ghost.
And, but, and it's frustrating. It's not even so much tense for a lot of it, because you're fairly sure he's just going to stay in the box. But it's just, it's the frustration of people on the other end really not listening to what he's saying.
There's a lot of people almost, yeah, just misinterpreting things he said.
Yeah.
And sort of saying, well why did you climb into the box? I didn't climb it. He never said that he climbed into it. And it's something you don't see in many films, where people just genuinely slightly misunderstand what you say in that
way. I think
way.
That may be because normally in a film, you sort of need to make it quite short, or you don't have time, sort of screen time, to sort of go off on slightly confused tangents and people not quite knowing what's going on if it doesn't serve the plot. Whereas for this, you're not going anywhere.
No.
Yeah, he's just in a box. It's not real time, I don't think.
Well, but I was thinking about this. It's not because
he wake up about 6:30?
Yeah.
And then he finds out, I think, but he hears from the kidnappers that they want money by 9 o'clock.
I'm pretty sure that it's not real time because he occasionally sleeps or blanks out.
Yes.
But I think it's that every moment he's conscious, we're with him. I don't think there's any cuts in that periods of time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've got nowhere to go as the audience except for this box. Mm. So you can have the time to have these sort of, not pointless conversations, but these irritating conversations.
And they do wind you up. The on-call music and all that sort of
put you through. He phones, I think it's his sister-in-law.
Yeah.
And he's desperately trying to get the number of the State Department. And she's basically saying, well, don't take that tone with me. And you can understand why, if someone just phones up shouting at you, you wouldn't necessarily be receptive. But because we know why he is, it's just,
Yeah.
And you get a few camera tricks. So you occasionally move outside the box, but only to get a long shot of him in the box.
Yeah.
But the entire film is underground, him in the box, in a tight space.
Mm.
And it's not one for claustrophobes.
No, really. It is definitely, I would say, I'd say it's a very good film, a very well-made film.
Yeah.
Very well directed, very well written, very well acted. But, yeah, even with all those things, if you don't like this sort of film, you're not going to like this sort of film.
Well, yeah. But it's not, there's no gore or horror, or so there's moments of tension. There's sort of one or two.
There's a couple of, a slight amount of horror, I suppose, in terms of,
yeah, one or two.
A slight bit of mutilation, but
that's true.
But apart from
and
that,
and yeah, one or two things because he has to record a video for the kidnappers. He receives a couple of videos and a video and a photo and things. So you get a degree of outside presence.
It's very clever in that they clearly have had to work backwards and think, okay, can we do a film in a coffin with one guy for 90 minutes, 95 minutes, in fact. And then they've worked out, well, we can, but we'd need light. And we can't, because of the rules of the film, they don't want to artificially, you know, some films do this thing where they go, oh, well, it's bedtime, it's nighttime, we're in this bedroom, but we'll have a bit of light just so you can see what's going on.
So all the street lights, there's normally at nighttime, there's bright blue light coming in through the windows
exactly.
for some reason.
But of course, there's none of that here. So they've had to work out, okay, we'll give them a lighter. And then, of course, you get the peril of, well, when's that? That's using up oxygen, and that's going to run out. They've got a torch, which is a bit wonky.
Yeah.
And also
has two light settings, which don't really get used much either. And I think red is good for night vision or something. So it's clearly a torch with a purpose. But also that means you can mix the lighting up a bit as that as well.
And then there's also, of course, the his mobile phone, his cell phone, which then lights up as well. And then
the battery in that is
And, of course, the battery's going to go, so that's a bit of peril as well. Yes. So that's quite well put together.
And you've got, I think, two sort of green chemical lights as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So that's three or four distinct light sources, which make it all look quite different.
And the nice thing is that they've got those. So not only that, then, of course, by giving him a phone, they've clearly had to think, well, if he's got a phone, he surely can just phone to get out. And then, of course, that's his way of getting some outside communication. Because, again, he's not going to speak out loud. In reality, if he had no phone, it's going to be a very poor 90-minute film of him just going, well, here I am in a coffin.
Exactly.
How shall I get out of this particular fix?
Exactly. You need a reason for him to
speak, you know. Yeah. So they've got that. And as a result, they've clearly worked back from that. They've had to sort of reverse engineer it. But as a result, I thought it's not only a film that's very compelling, but it's also a film that could only really have been made now.
Yes.
Because before, you know, 10 years ago, you couldn't have got the mobile phone with videos and that sort of thing.
Yes. I did also think, because given how dodgy the signal is, I thought, well, he's sending a video, which admittedly is quite low resolution, but it sends very quickly.
It does, really.
It doesn't look like a 3G network. And it just whips straight up. That's minor nitpicking.
And not only that, but they've also made it interesting and topical and relevant with the sort of political thing of having the Iraqi
thing. Yeah, because it's not... I mean, it's a slightly political film, but not really, because it's more about... It's not about the right or wrong of being there at all, but it's more how the contractors are treated, really. Because he's not a soldier, he's not a high-powered executive or anyone, he's just a bloke who drives a truck who's been kidnapped. And he slowly starts to think or realise that essentially no one cares. But then, you know, people try and demonstrate they do care, but do they really, and what's going on, are people really... And you know, he says, rightly so, you know, when faced with people on the phone, say, no, we're doing everything we can to get you out. And he just, what? Tell me what you're actually... And everyone's just being a bit vague. But then other times he phones someone and then finds out, you know, oh, yes, I've heard from the other person you phoned, who he just left a message with. No, we know what's going on. So so you get moments of hope and moments of despair. And it's very well-paced with that. But yeah, so the only politics in it is essentially how badly the contractors are treated and whether anyone really cares about getting him out or not.
I thought it was an excellent put together film. I don't know if I want to see it again ever.
I'd like to see it again at some point, but I won't rush to see it again.
It might be 15, 20 years.
You come out of it wanting a hug, I think, and not a hug just by being compressed in a wooden box.
It turns out I'm allergic to the idea of being buried alive. being put on hold. Equally terrifying situation.
Yeah, but it's definitely worth seeing. And weirdly, probably works well in a cinema, I think. Because you get this sort of very dark room with sort of everything big in front of you, means it's quite easy to get involved in it. Whereas watching it on a TV...
If you watch it on TV, you need to watch it at home late at night with all the lights off.
Yes. But not like a horror film, because it's not scary as such, but it's just for that sense of...
Maybe watch it in the bath. not a full bath, an empty bath.
No, that's true.
With a big plank of wood over the top.
Nailed in.
Watch it in a coffin. Bury yourself in the garden.
Bury yourself alive with just a little DVD player. And then watch on that. Well, I'll argue, if you're going to bury yourself alive, I don't know if you really need them.
That's a perfect tangent, actually. Can I do this little tangent thing?
Yeah.
I picked up this...
Are you going to plug something?
No. Well, I plugged something that's in the past.
You're the worst promoter ever.
I'm really bad. It's a flyer
I
picked up.
Kids, get your time machine out.
I did a gig in Worthing on the South Coast quite recently. There's a lovely cinema down there. Which is called The Dome, I believe it's called, right on the seafront, really, literally over the road from the cinema is the beach and the pier and all that. And it's an old-fashioned cinema. I think it's about 70, 80 years old. Wooden seats.
Wow.
So, and, you know, really lovely feel to it. I saw The Hangover there a year or two ago, and it's just really nice. And they had a gig in the cinema. And the local film festival, Film Society, put on this film festival thing. And I thought it was a great idea. And it's in the past, so I'm not plugging it. But I just thought it's really good. I wanted to sort of air this because they put on films, but in appropriate locations to the film.
Okay.
So they've done Fahrenheit 451 in the library.
Right. They then set fire to halfway through.
Pretty much. And you get a free library DVD, all that sort of thing as well. Yeah, they give you freebies while you're there. And you get to choose a free paperback from the bookshelves.
Oh, nice.
So I think to rent, probably, because it's a library.
Yeah.
The Big Lebowski, they're showing in a bowling alley.
Oh, yeah.
And you get a free game of bowling while you're there as well.
Oh, that's quite cool.
A Brief Encounter, they're showing at Worthing Railway Station in the old waiting room.
Right,
so
nice.
Even the proper waiting room. Night at the Museum, they're showing in Worthing Museum.
Mm-hmm.
And Oil City Confidential, they are showing at the Aintree. I don't know what that means.
Fair enough.
But,
I'm sure that's right.
Which is, oh, it's because Oil City Confidential is about Dr. Feelgood, the band. So they're showing it with a tribute band of Dr. Feelgood. So it's kind of, I just thought it was a really nice idea of putting films on inappropriate locations. Mm. And, so watching Buried in a Coffin kind of links into that. Good. So, in conclusion.
Definitely go and see it. And I think probably I'd say in the cinema rather than waiting. Just because I think it, despite being such a claustrophobic film, watching it on a big screen helps.
Yes, I'd agree.
Yeah. But just bear in mind, it's not a happy film, really. You will not come out of it. Not giving away the ending at all, but it's just the whole film at all. It's just this bloke suffering for 90 minutes.
And speaking of ending, the only comment we have got is from Susie Bennett, who's just said, worst ending ever. We are, of course, not at liberty to divulge what that may involve.
Yes.
You will have to see it if you wish to know
be that
what happens.
Quality or tone, whatever her implication is, you'll just have to go and judge for yourself.
I thought it was probably the right ending. But I even saying that makes me feel sort of, I don't know, not implicitly, I don't know. But it was an interesting ending, and it also
keeps you guessing up until the last minute. But it's nicely handled, the ending. Yeah. There are a couple. It's not twists as such, but it's rather than if you're trying to predict, you know, Ireland this way, then it tries to pull the rug out from
you. Because if you think, what must be seen as quite a simplistic film in that one bloke in a box, if you're there thinking, well, either the ending is he's going to get out, or the ending is he doesn't get out.
Yeah.
And without giving too much away, one of those is kind of true.
True,
but, it's not as simple as that. It's not as simple as just going, hey, or, so it's satisfying narratively.
Yes, yeah, because not just the physical answer of what happened to him, but there's a slight callback to stuff we found out earlier as well. So yeah, so just
worth a look. Yeah. Worth a look. The other guys. You want to do the other guys?
This is Will Ferrell comedy. Him and Mark Wahlberg playing two cops who are the other guys, as opposed to Samuel L. Jackson and The Rock, who are the guys.
Of course.
Who are sort of hero cops. And these are the other guys who want to be those hero cops rather than the paper pushers. And I'd heard it was the best thing since Anchorman. It was wrong. I laughed about seven times. And I normally laugh in comedy films. Because I know you're not a big laugher.
I'm more likely to go, clever.
Well, yeah, because you're judging it too professionally.
I've lost my humour now. I haven't laughed in 10 years.
You're just too professional with it. Whereas I'm just an average punter, and so tend to laugh at stuff. And it was just... And that's the trouble with the jokes that did come that worked. I thought, do more of those! No, you're just going to go off on a semi-improvised ramble again that isn't as funny as you think it is.
Will Ferrell has been given far too much rope at the minute.
Yeah, that's
far too much free rein.
Because whereas Anchorman, I think partly there are other people involved in Anchorman, or it's more of an ensemble thing. And also, I think they probably either rehearsed it more, or he was better at the time, or something. Because I haven't seen it for a while, but I remember finding it all quite funny. Whereas this, there are just... two convoluted rambles that just don't quite fit. Then there are one or two moments which are clearly scripted moments of comedy, and then there's one joke which I will ruin for you just because it illustrates my point, which is when Steve Coogan plays a businessman who they're trying to protect or find out what he's involved in, and they go to interview him, and he says, well, but yeah, before you talk about this, maybe I could just interest you in these two tickets to a show that I have to go and see. And they say, oh, brilliant. And just cuts to them seeing this show. And they go, oh, he's fantastic. Oh, no, we wanted to interview him. Oh, he's distracted. And they run back.
Right.
And they go, no, we wanted to talk to you. Oh, fair enough. But before you talk to me, how about these two shows? And they go off again. They go, oh, he's done it again. And so just cut in between the shows.
Right.
And that's clearly scripted because he had to go and film it differently. And that was quite funny, the way it's handled in the film. But there aren't enough moments like that where I thought, this is a joke. Let's write this joke, plan this joke, show it, get a laugh. It's just, oh, let's just have a chat and it'll be funny, and it's not.
And probably, I'd imagine if you're writing the film and you know Will Ferrell's going to be involved... then I don't know if they would have known at that stage if he would be, but at least if he's involved, you think, oh, it's fine. It doesn't need to be that funny, this scene.
Yeah.
He'll wing it. Yeah. He'll feralise it.
And he's not bad. He's quite straight-laced in it. But, it's just there are certain... And certainly he's married to Eva Mendes, who Mark Wahlberg lusts after, but Will Ferrell constantly points out how hideously ugly she is, which is sort of funny, and they sort of address it. But it's not really, and it's like it's an idea that, oh, this will be funny, say Eva Mendes is ugly. But they don't really make it work at any point.
Yeah.
And something like when he's trying to, there's the almost requisite by now old woman forced to say filthy things.
Oh, that's always a hoot.
Well, that's it, and again, partly it's quite old, but also it's normally, the only thing that makes it funny is if you've got an older character, male or female, saying filthy things, without caring at all, just coming out with them. Because that's what makes it entertaining. But this is sort of a woman who they're trying to pass messages to each other that are getting increasingly filthy. And she ends up to say, oh, no, I don't want to say this because it's just filthy. The woman, you kind of undermine the entire thing of what makes it funny, and now I just don't care. So, it just didn't work for me. There were a couple of laughs, but it was just massively disappointing.
If I might put on my guise as Adrian Hyatt for a minute.
Fair enough. what an impersonation.
Thank you. No. Agent Hyatt has messaged in saying The Other Guys is amazing.
Well, yeah, we're going to have to agree to disagree.
To you on that one.
Well, yeah, because I just didn't. And yeah, people may well find it funny, and I won't even judge them for it, because it's more... It's not like everything is just, oh, it's all terrible. But it's just there's lots of stuff that didn't work for me. And it may work for other people, but I am not one of those people.
I see.
So...
Fair play.
Maybe rent it and try it, but I just lower your expectations, and I think that might help.
Fair play.
It's no Hangover. It's no Anchorman. No. It's not a Hot Tub Time Machine. I enjoyed more.
Really?
Yeah. Ooh. And Hot Tub Time Machine is silly but
it's
funny.
It's sinking between the bit from level to level.
Hot Tub Time Machine was. I still laughed. I may have thought, "Oh, this is ridiculous," but I still laughed throughout it. And this, I didn't. I was too busy judging it to laugh.
Oh dear.
So
big budget comedies. You see, you've got to go small.
Well,
go small. It's funnier.
Mm. Although moving on from big budgets to quite again, well, from the look of it, this is all people in a lift. But the trailer seems.
Yeah, I should have probably done this next to Buried. Really, well, sort of a box based films. Mostly in one location. Although
we haven't mentioned the title yet.
Not entirely. This is a film called Devil.
Yes, from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan. I know. This is sort of the reverse of The Town. Because whereas with The Town, they said from the director of Gone Baby Gone without mentioning Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
With this, they said from the mind of M. Night Shyamalan. I thought, well, that put me off. If I didn't know it was him, I might have gone to see it.
Well, it also means they're kind of saying he hasn't directed it. He probably hasn't written it, but it's from his mind.
It's right. We told him, and now it's in his mind.
He told a man on a bus one day this idea for a film. That man wrote this film. And this is from his mind.
We're not crediting him with it.
No, exactly. The scariest thing I think about this film is in the first few seconds when you sit down, the lights come down, up on the screen, up it comes, saying the Night Chronicles is the first title, and then it says Chapter One, Devil, and then that's the scariest thing. You're thinking. Oh, he's going to do loads of these.
he's going to churn them out.
He's going to do loads. He's got a plan. I think he's doing like three or five or something of these, the Night Chronicles.
Right.
And then this one's Devil. The next one will be Angel. The next one will be just Man on a Street. The next one is, oh, slightly Angel Man, slightly Devil Man. And they're all going to be...
One horn, one wing. It's a very weird KFC bucket.
Exactly. Oh, dear. Yeah, it's... It's kind of awful. It's
oh, that's not. Oh, I can see the poster quote now.
It's kind of awful.
It's kind of awful.
Yeah.
I mean, does it work as a full length film?
Well, it's basically it's an episode of the Twilight Zone. If they're still making the Twilight Zone nowadays, or the Outer Limits, or any of those anthology, you know, even like they had recently Stephen King's Nightmares and Dreamscapes, which of course are all Stephen King's, and so. M. Night Shyamalan couldn't really go, can I be included in... Oh, they're all Stephen King's. Yeah. Sorry about that. Well, I'll go and make the Night Chronicles, and I'll show you how few people can fill a cinema. And it must feel like he's wanting to do one of those things.
Yeah.
So they're all, they're all going to be very similar. They're all going to be kind of low budget, should be on TV very late night. They're all going to have a slightly moral overtone, but just tagged on at the end.
Right. So again, just like the Outer Limits. But can man truly progress?
I used to love those. I love the Outer Limits ones where they hadn't paid no real attention to it, where they start off with this big moral thing, but then they've got to link into the story somehow. Yeah. And so they sort of say, man has wondered for years whether aliens may exist. And this question has worried no man any more than Jeff, a greengrocer. Let's go and see Jeff the greengrocer for 45 minutes.
Who at the end says, oh, at least aliens didn't see that.
That's it. And then the voiceover comes back saying, and Jeff has learned what many of us have, that aliens may or may not exist. Join us next time on the Night Chronicles.
For more uncertainty. So the premise is people
on
the lift.
Let's deal with the plot then, basically. Yeah. So it starts off, you've got people coming into work or into this very, very big building, and five of them end up in a lift.
Right.
Just purely randomly, they're just five people in a lift. And then halfway up, the lift stops.
Right.
And then for a good half hour of the film, it's the security guards all sort of going, oh, we'll try and get you out, and we're trying, but we can't get you out, and we don't quite know why we can't get you out. And then they try and discover more about the people in the lift. But there's the people in the lift can hear security guards, but for some reason, the security guards can't hear the people in the lift. There's an error in the, you know, that it's broken.
Right.
Which seems very convenient for the sort of, we can't quite understand what your name, can you hold up your driving licenses, all that sort of thing.
What do they need to know who's in the lift?
Well, just because then the police come along, because they can't work out. Well, then the power starts to go in the lift, so then the lights go out, and then they go a bit, oh, we're frightened because we're in the dark. And you think of Ryan Reynolds, he's been in a coffin for the last day and a half.
You've got you've got air and you're flying. You know where you are. You're in a building. You're not buried in the desert somewhere.
So, so yeah, but when the lights go out, each time the lights sort of go a bit flickery, 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 someone either gets attacked.
Ooh.
Or someone gets a little bit. Oh, did I get someone's? There's blood on my back. Why is this? I've got. Ooh, and slowly they're either being killed off by. It's kind of like a really sort of, you know, crap whodunit sort of thing. And they're all in the lift, and at the end of it, the thing is though, the tagline of the film is one of these people isn't who they claim to be, and the film's called Devil. Now, can you work out what maybe one of these people?
Well, yeah.
Might be.
Is he possibly? The devil.
Could be.
Or, is that a big spoiler?
He could be a shoe salesman but claiming to be an overcoat salesman.
Brian Devil is an unfortunate surname.
Exactly. Yes.
I'm an evangelical Christian.
The name's Darren Evil.
But also, I mean, why? But if you're the devil, not if you're the devil, but you know, if one is the devil, why? And yeah, if you want to torment people. Well, I suppose torment kind of works. I thought if you want to kill people off, there are surely easier ways than breaking down a lift and then slowly killing
pretty
off
much.
You know, in a lift
pretty much
in the dark whenever the lights flicker.
The trouble is, there's that going on.
A killing spree.
Well, exactly. There's that going on. And then you slowly realise, you know, is there this idea that the devil would be there to punish these people, that, you know, there's sins that have been committed that they've not
true.
Repented for. And then there's this, one of the security guards is this uber religious sort of Catholic. I think he's Mexican, and he, when there's a detective and another security guard who were just going, yeah, we'll get you out of there soon, in that kind of broad, brash way.
Yeah.
But he's the one going, oh, but no, I think he's the devil, and I think we have this myth where I am from that the devil every 80 years will roam the earth and find a lift and trap people in the lift. And he starts spouting.
For the past 2,000 years, he's gone wanted. Exactly. Every 80 years, no, lifts, no invented yet.
Still not yet.
See you, Nacy.
Oh, but there is all this stuff about this mythology, this very much fictionalized religious mythology, which they've made up to suit the film.
Right.
And it's funny, if one person spouts it in the corner and everyone just goes, don't listen to, he's a nutter. He's crazy. He just does this all the time.
Yeah.
He should have a job as a lifter, technically. But then the police detective, who's, you know, the kind of the main guy in the film, starts to believe it and starts to listen to it and go, But what if it's true what he says about the fact that the devil will roam the earth and claim the souls and in front of people whose past sins may have been... And all the sort of thing that was very convenient.
No rational policeman, when faced with five people just trapped in a lift, would start to believe.
Well, particularly if someone just sort of says more widely held religious stuff, like, oh, but, you know, obviously everyone, you know, people sin and then you must repent for your sins.
Mm.
And then you might go, oh, fair enough, I've heard that from, you know, several million people on the planet believe that.
Yeah.
But the fact he's going, well, that real niche theology that you've just invented, that I've never heard in my life,
I'll buy into that.
But what if it's true? And so there's, and I saw the ending coming a mile off, and I think some didn't. I think some of the ending are quite clever what they've done there, but in a very much not clever in a cinematic way, I think, but more in an afternoon play of the week kind of tagged on. Go, I see it kind of.
So is most of the film just in that lift, or do they?
Well, it's in the lift or in the building. They're trying they're all around the building trying to stop it, and also if you can't work out who the devil is. Then
you haven't seen enough films.
I don't think. I think it's fairly obvious.
I haven't even seen the trailer, but I've now got a great mental image of in the lift, you've got four women and one bloke with a pointy beard and a red cape.
Big horns.
Hello. No, I'm just wearing a fancy dress costume.
Press five, please. Sorry, six. Press six. Six, six.
Why the trident? Oh, it's just a fork.
Exactly. Off of the canteen. I think it's a film ripe for lampoonery, which I think says everything you need to know about it. It's diverting enough, but I thought it was quite laughable. Laughably awful. Could see the ending coming out of Marloff, but it's at the same time fairly enjoyable if you just want to sit back and watch an episode of The Outer Limits dragged out over an hour and a half.
Yeah,
which, you know.
And pay several.
Well, true, but occasionally. I was working my way through The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits quite recently, and sometimes that's what you want, but.
Yeah, it's normally sort of 40 minutes, not necessarily.
Yeah, so I think it's not going to.
Because
a big cinema thing.
That Night Chronicles thing. Because the Hammer horror films you used to get, which was sort of anthology.
Yeah.
We'd have four people on a train and they all start talking about horror stories. I think it would probably work better as that.
Mm.
If you get, you know, five people, not even in a lip, but five people together start swapping stories. And then the devil story is one of them. And so, you know, 10, 15 minutes, that story. And then you have another one, another one, another one. And all in one film.
Yeah.
And then do it that way.
Well, more than likely, that's what once he's finished his Chronicle feast, he'll release it on DVD. And something like that would be a very good way of linking it together.
It's like an 8-hour marathon.
It's going to be a marathon.
Boiling
it
down to a simple premise, shortly told.
We've had some comments.
Yeah.
Sean Jacks said, Devil, okay, kind of keeps the suspense up, but in another way, doesn't quite manage it. Okay. Not as good as it could have been. 3 out of 5. And my brother, Mr. Mark Young, says, I thought Devil was a perfectly acceptable run-of-the-mill, 3-star, Sunday afternoon kind of film. You wouldn't watch it a second time or anything, but it was entertaining enough to pass a couple of hours.
No,
so
right.
I think it says it all.
So basically average across the board, really.
Yeah, pretty much. Can't wait for The Night Chronicles 2.
Yeah. Well, it may be better.
Well, I'm looking forward to it just having another rant again, to be honest.
Well, yeah.
Sometimes you just want those. So, should we wrap up with some Desert Island flicks?
Yeah, I think we should. That's all the films.
Yeah, indeed. That's your lot. So, we're thinking about films where the director has also starred in it.
Yes.
Rather arrogantly, thinking no one else can play this role.
Exactly. I'm going to cast myself.
I know the perfect person.
I'm going to play all of the parts in a variety of wigs and hats.
It turns out to the producer, and they said, have you found a star yet? I have found the perfect person.
He's the best-looking person.
I've done a lot of auditioning this weekend, and may I say, ended up on the casting couch one or two times.
Oh, dear. That's a mental image of Ben Affleck.
It is, rather, isn't it? Yeah. So you've got a few to choose from here.
Yes.
You've got your Woody Allens,
your
Mel Gibsons, your Kevin Costners.
I know one random example, which I'm just looking up online, for example, was Danny DeVito in Wars of the Roses.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, because I like Wars of the Roses, but I mean, I don't think it's going to be a winning candidate, but because he plays the lawyer who sort of ties both stories together, I think. He's not sort of the star as such, but he's involved.
Yeah.
I think you're going to end up with a Clint Eastwood, a Woody Allen, or a Mel Gibson, probably.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, The Town is a fairly good example, but probably not the best example yet. I feel he's got even more to come.
Yes.
I'm taught because you've got Clint Eastwood, Unforgiven, is a very good one.
Yeah, very good film.
And while Kevin Costner has done good things, but Braveheart I like a lot. But not so much the history juggling. Although Dances with Wolves is a classic.
Very true. Dances with Wolves is very good.
Mm.
Yeah. His other ones, Waterworld and The Postman, not so good.
Not really.
Yeah.
No. Waterworld, not as bad as everyone seems to think. My instinct would probably be Unforgiven. Unless that's where you were going.
Well, it kind of was.
Well, in which case...
But I could be persuaded to Annie Hall, so...
Well, see, I have a lot of respect for Annie Hall, having seen it for the first time, well, a little while ago now, and seeing lots of so many romantic comedy conventions, which was started by that.
I do. I mean, Woody Allen has contributed so much to the director star genre in a way that it's very tempting to go there. But you pick one. What are you going for?
I'm going to pick Unforgiven because you let me go first, and so you snooze, you lose.
I did rather. I snossed, I lost.
Yes.
So I was just looking up Treasure of the Sierra Madre because I had a funny feeling that was directed by the same person, but actually, it's directed by Walter Huston. No, it's directed by John Huston. Walter Huston, so that's what it was. Right. So I'm going to go for Unforgiven.
No.
Oh, you just did, didn't you?
No, it's not just
me. All right, Annie Hall, Woody Allen.
Fair enough. But if you've got any preference, then email in.
podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Yes. And we shall leave it there.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah, see you next time.
So long.
Bye.